It's Tuesday, August 18th, and this is Israel in 10, the Misgav Daily Brief. I'm Laura Sellier in Tel Aviv. UNICEF has blown apart claims that Israel deliberately starved children in Gaza. Its latest figures show malnutrition rates in the Strip were lower than in Syria and Jordan, and far lower than in Sudan, having improved sharply after 2025. Those serious allegations are central to the case against Israel at the ICC. So what does this new evidence mean? I'll discuss that with British barrister Natasha House from UK Lawyers for Israel and the newly formed Centre for the International Rule of Law. That in a moment, but first the headlines. Israel's energy minister, Eli Cohen, is on course to top the Likud primary, followed by Amir Ohana, Yariv Levin and Miri Regev. With Israel's ruling party polling at between 22 and 24 seats and Prime Minister Netanyahu reserving several top slots for his own candidates, anyone outside of the top 16 risks missing out on the next Knesset. That could leave several current ministers, including Ze'ev Elkin, Gila Gamliel, Mai Golan and Avi Dichter, out of a job in October. US Special Envoy Jared Kushner says Gaza's demilitarization could begin within 30 days after nearly 4 hours of talks with Prime Minister Netanyahu. He says Washington will not support rebuilding before weapons are removed and that Israel will retain the right to act against imminent threats. Misgav Institute head Meir Ben Shabbat has warned that the 15-point agreement could end up guaranteeing Hamas's survival. Tensions remain high in the Strait of Hormuz after a commercial vessel was hit by a projectile, damaging its engine room and injuring a crew member. The US says its steel wall blockade has now redirected 64 commercial vessels, while Iran is renewing its threats against ships in the Strait. The escalation follows the expiry of a 60-day ceasefire, with both sides appearing to dig in for a longer confrontation. And two senior Iranian officials have told Reuters that mounting economic pressure could fuel protests and erode the regime's legitimacy. The war also hitting President Trump's approval ratings. A Reuters Ipsos poll puts him at just 33%, his lowest rating since taking office. 80% of respondents believe US involvement in Iran will continue for some time. And Egypt is warning Ethiopia against plans to build three more dams on the River Nile. Cairo accuses Addis Ababa of trying to dominate the river and threaten the water rights of downstream countries, deepening an already bitter dispute over the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam. Before today's conversation, a reminder you can sponsor Israel in 10. Just drop us a line at misgavdailybrief@gmail.com. Now here's Natasha Hausdorff.
What impact, if any, does this new UNICEF report have on the case against Israel at the International Court of Justice, the ICJ?
Well, the case that's been brought by South Africa at the ICJ is much broader than the issue of starvation or malnutrition as addressed in that UNICEF report. That, of course, alleges genocide against Israel and is a wholly different debate. But the challenge of starvation itself is explicitly relevant to what is going on at the other court in The Hague, namely the ICC, because the arrest warrants that were applied for by Karim Khan, the now dismissed chief prosecutor, were explicitly based on this allegation of deliberate starvation of Palestinians in Gaza. And what this report has demonstrated is that acute levels of malnutrition amongst children in the Gaza Strip are on a par with the levels of this phenomenon in Germany. And in fact, the position of malnutrition in Gaza amongst children is far better than many of the surrounding Arab countries. It certainly further puts the lie with UN data to these allegations that there was an insufficient amount of food entering into the Gaza Strip. But it hasn't changed things substantially, because I would argue strongly that that has been clear from the outset. With UK Lawyers for Israel, we have done numerous reports challenging the IPC Famine Review Committee analysis, because it is based on incomplete or impartial incorrect information. And the methodology behind these reports in so many respects, sought to inflate the analysis and support predictions of starvation and famine, which have ultimately never materialized. In respect to the ICC arrest warrants, that should have a tremendous impact. But so long as this court maintains its current course, which is no longer to act as a court, but rather a political body, I don't think we should be holding our breath. I don't see that these arrest warrants are necessarily going to be voided either because of the procedural irregularities associated with their application or because of the factual glaring inaccuracies once again laid bare by this recent UNICEF report.
I want to move on to another topic, and that's the volatility and the violence in the West Bank, Judea and Samaria. It's been in the headlines a lot. You have valiantly tried to get Israel's point across to a very hostile international media. What are people getting wrong?
What I've tried to do is talk about how international law applies the situation. And that's extremely important because a proper application of international law debunks this notion that this is occupied territory, debunks the notion that Israeli communities in the disputed territories in Judea and Samaria are in any way illegal settlements. But I was there myself last week, and I think one of the primary aspects of what the media coverage here is failing to grapple with is what the real illegal building situation comprises. And this is funded by the international community in Area C, which under the Oslo Accords was recognized as continuing under full Israeli administration. When one considers that the areas A and B under Palestinian Authority civil administration are about 68% empty, there can be no credible case for building illegal structures, mostly with UN or EU funding, in Israeli administered territory, which is unlawful, both under international law and Israeli law, without planning permission, and often without the appropriate regulation in terms of sewage, water supply, electricity. That process, which I stress has international funding and backing, is the serious issue of, you know, land grab, a situation that has sought to create facts on the ground. And that has been a very significant factor in the spiraling tensions that we have been witnessing. Now, while the increased violence, which absolutely must be dealt with, is getting back-to-back media coverage, the core aspects of what has been driving this, what has been fueling it over several decades, the famous context, if you will, seems to be entirely omitted from that coverage.
The legal situation in this territory is extremely complex, isn't it? And it's very difficult for people to get their heads around. I think one of the main points, though, that people tend to focus on is the civil rights that people have living in the West Bank, dependent on whether they are Israeli or Palestinian. Could you break that down for us a little bit?
Well, that emanates from the internationally approved Oslo Accords, the creation of the Palestinian Authority with self-determination, self-governance in areas A and B of the West Bank. That means that Israel does not control the Palestinians living under the Palestinian autonomy, that many people have called a sort of de facto state, that does not have any authority, control, or administration over the areas of Jewish settlement. And in fact, one has seen, unfortunately, a complete segregation of Jews and Arabs in that part of the territory because Jews are not permitted in Palestinian-controlled areas. That area A and B of Palestinian-controlled territory has effectively been made Judenrein. It has been ethnically cleansed of Jews. The really distressing aspect of the international discussion, and this includes protestations from the International Court of Justice, is that the international community is lobbying for the rest of that area, so that area that remained under Israeli administration, Area C, to be ethnically cleansed of Jews in the same fashion. I consider that to be a morally reprehensible position, but it is one that is being buttressed by a great deal of false reporting over violence emanating from the region. A lot of this is based on UN data, UN statistics, and actually an analysis conducted relatively recently by an Israeli NGO on what the UN data on so-called settler violence constitutes made it clear that the UN considers an elementary school class visiting the ancient site of Shiloh to be settler violence. Likewise, for car accidents, dog bites, all of those are bracketed by the United Nations data under this term settler violence. Like with genocide, if everything is genocide, nothing is genocide. If every interaction of Israeli Jews living in these areas constitutes settler violence, then the term itself is degraded. And in some respects, it is being used as a weapon to justify this position that Jews should simply not be in these areas. Again, a major disinformation campaign, cognitive warfare that is being waged here in order to generate this sort of hostility.
Well, quite, because in part because of these allegations like genocide, deliberate starvation and violence, anti-Semitism is soaring. Are there any legal means to fight this?
So each jurisdiction has its own unique approach to the phenomenon of anti-Semitism. Many have adopted the IHRA definition, but I think the critical aspect that is yet to be grappled with is understanding that the rhetoric, much of which you have just repeated, these modern blood libels of starvation, ethnic cleansing, colonialism, apartheid, genocide, settler violence as a widespread phenomenon, attempts of spreading this kind of disinformation themselves are driving anti-Semitism to record levels. And all of those in positions of responsibility, including politicians, policymakers, who are peddling in that false information, are ultimately contributing to these increasing levels of anti-Semitism. And until that is properly recognized, I don't think it can be ultimately dealt with. Politicians need to understand around the world the effect that they are having. We've seen the consequences of that so often. It has occasioned blood in the streets. And until we deal with the waves of propaganda and misinformation against Jews in Israel, I cannot see Jews in the diaspora feeling safe.
That's your Israel in 10. Thanks for watching or listening, and we'll be back tomorrow. Goodbye.